The Guardian.
Welcome to another episode of Science Weekly Extra, where we explore questions relating to the COVID-19 outbreak, some of which have been sent in by you, our listeners. The response so far has been incredible, and so we've decided to ramp it up to 2 episodes a week for the foreseeable future. There are so many new areas to explore, and we'll try and continue to address as many of them as we can. But please do keep questions coming by emailing us at scienceweekly@theguardian.com. In today's episode, we're looking at fatality rates, why there are different ones being quoted across the media, how they are calculated, and whether fatality rates are actually the most useful numbers to be looking at.
It's not only how many people, but it's how long they're going to need care for if they are critically ill.
I'm Hannah Devlin, and welcome to this special edition of Science Weekly Extra.
Hello.
Hi, Paul.
Oh, hang on.
I was joined over the line by Paul Hunter, Professor in Medicine at the University of East Anglia, who helped us unravel some of these questions. Paul, we've seen lots of different reports of the fatality rate from coronavirus. Experts and a few non-experts, most famously Trump, have said it could be 1% or lower, while the World Health Organization has given a figure of 3.4%. And I think these different figures that are flying around are causing both confusion and also maybe some scepticism. Could you just talk me through why we're seeing these different figures coming from different sources?
So the first thing is that figure of 3.4% is rising. The most recent days, that figure has increased. Now, the figure of 3.4, what was 3.4%, was basically the number of deaths that we believe have been caused by COVID-19 divided by the number of COVID-19 cases that we know of. Now, that figure will be an underestimate of the real death rate. And the reason why it's an underestimate is that people get recorded at the start of their illness, but they die at the end of their illness. So within that figure, there will still be a lot of people that we already know about that are still relatively early in their illness that haven't yet died, but will die at some point in the future. So the actual figure might be somewhat higher, possibly 5 or 6%. But that figure itself is probably an overestimate, because there are undoubtedly many people in the community who have the infection, but that we don't know about. So that the 3.4%, possibly higher, is only based on people that we know have actually been diagnosed with the infection. So the 1% figure comes from a rough estimate of, well, given all that we know, can we estimate how many people there are in the community? So what the real number of people ill are, and then use that rather than the cases that we know about. And that would then drop that figure down. And most of us think that's probably in the range of about 1% to 2%.
One thing that I was also interested in is if you look at different countries, you just see these really different numbers coming out of the figures. So, for example, Italy, I checked just before we came up to record, they had 12,500 cases and just over 800 deaths, whereas South Korea has got about 8,000 cases, but only 66 deaths. How much of that is to do with just differences in the way they're capturing the number of overall cases?
That's almost entirely the explanation, in my view. It is purely that the Italians don't seem to have been as effective at identifying mild cases. So their denominator is too small in relationship to the denominator in South Korea or indeed in England.
And do you think there is going to be much difference in terms of the actual death rate in different countries and dependent on medical care?
One of the big factors is going to be the proportion of people in your community that are elderly. You know, and even if the same age-specific death rates apply, we are likely to see a higher death rate in the UK than in China because of our generally older population. The other factor certainly is healthcare services. At the peak of the outbreak, healthcare is likely to decline because of the demand, and also actually because a lot of healthcare workers will be off sick as well. And that is almost certainly likely to be reflected into a higher death rate.
Paul, I've still seen a lot of people, that even this week, commenting that for most people who get coronavirus, it's probably not worse than a cold or flu. What does the fatality rate tell us about how we should be thinking about the risks?
The large majority, particularly people under 60, particularly people who are otherwise healthy, the vast majority of them will either have a relatively mild illness, and even if they have a more severe illness, they're likely to get over it and recover. How it compares to influenza and seasonal influenza and indeed pandemic flu is dependent on two things. The one is how many people get infected, and the other is how many people who are ill with the infection are likely to die. Now, we know that seasonal flu and most pandemic flus in recent years have a mortality rate of around about 0.1%, maybe a bit lower than that. So the current estimates of the fatality for COVID-19 makes it somewhere around 10 to 20 times as lethal as influenza. Now, the total number of deaths will depend on not only on that, but how many people get the illness. And at the moment, it's still not absolutely clear how many people will suffer illness, will get the infection in the UK, even at the peak.
At what point do we start becoming confident that we've got a real handle on what the number is?
When it's all over. Yes. Yeah, two.
But what does it require? I mean, is it when you're able to start doing kind of widespread random testing to kind of get a sense of what that denominator of people who are affected but might not have severe symptoms?
That will certainly help. But, you know, one of the years, I mean, I've been working as an epidemiologist most of my professional career. And one of the things that, as an epidemiologist, is that I know that all the figures are not accurate. Whatever figure you hear is subject to various sorts of biases, uncertainties, that which means that, you know, the reality in the community may be different, but that doesn't mean they're not helpful.
And I imagine the types of numbers that are really important depends a lot on who you are, whether you're looking at this as an epidemiologist, as a government, as a hospital. I mean, for hospitals, presumably they're not just interested in the fatality rate, but they want to know how many people are going to need critical care as the epidemic unfolds.
The hospital will be putting all its effort into trying to keep as many people alive, and particularly into the people who are most severely ill. And so it's not only how many people, but it's how long they're going to need care for if they are critically ill. We see this is not an infection that if you get it really severely that you get over in a matter of a day or so. People can be ill for several days, if not 2 or 3 weeks.
I mean, we've heard from people who are really worried that they're in that 1%, they're among that vulnerable population of people who are elderly or maybe have underlying health conditions. Do you have any advice or reassurance for people who feel as though they might be in that group?
Yeah, I mean, I think if you look at the the highest death rates in the highest and the most elderly vulnerable groups in China, it was still up to 18-20% at most. So, you know, even if you're in one of those high risk groups, you are far more likely to get through it and survive than you are to succumb and die. I think one of the things is, for me, very clearly, and it's becoming talked about in the media at the moment, is what can people who are in these particularly vulnerable groups do to try and protect themselves from getting infection? And I think it's sort of a protective self-isolation. This is something that I would like to see discussed more widely and advice generated. And certainly the World Health Organization is starting to address that issue as well.
Fascinating. Paul, thank you so much for speaking to us.
Take care. Bye-bye.
That was Paul Hunter, Professor of Medicine at the University of East Anglia. We'd love to hear any scientific questions you might have on the virus, as well as any thoughts on this week's episode. Be sure to send us an email at scienceweekly@theguardian.com. Our sister podcast, Today in Focus, is also doing some great coverage of the COVID-19 outbreak, so make sure to have a listen. Just search Today in Focus wherever you get your podcasts.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.